The Big House, as the impressive building was called, rose in majesty, well apart from the barns, bunkhouse, corrals, and sheds that one usually saw on cattle outfits. There sure wasn't any straw bosses or drovers standing around in the open. The windows of the house were dark and revealed no sign of anyone peering out, but I didn't doubt that we were being watched. Big Nose George walked up to greet me as I tied up Critter.
You figure out what we should do?
Go talk. I can't make any sense of it until I talk to him.
It's hard for you to make sense of anything, Pickens.
Give me a white flag on a stick.
Chicken, ain't you? If I had my druthers, I'd surround that big house and charge and leave two bodies behind. We got a dozen tough drovers here and a few more.
Well, you got big balls, George. Me, I do things my way.
Give him a chance, Big Nose. Then when he gets shot up or can't budge those little turds, we'll do it our way.
Well, they wasn't saying much about trying to keep their two employers alive. The fastest way to put the two Braggs into their graves was to start a war. Well, as long as you're all bulletproof, including the Braggs, your plan might work fine. Spit and Sam headed for the bunkhouse, running across an open area where he might take a hit, and pretty quick came back with a sheet on a stick. The thing was all sheet and no stick, but it'd do. I took it, told them kibitzers to watch their top knots, and headed out, waving that monster sheet on that dinky stick like I was flagging a horse race. I got maybe 20 paces toward the big house, and a shot hit the dirt ahead of me.
Stop that, Sheriff!
Who am I talking to?
Pair of no-good orphans.
All right, you gotta tell me what you want and who's in there.
We got them Braggs, and we'll put enough bullets in them so they'll bleed out in 30 seconds if you don't follow what we ask.
Who are you, boy?
Who do you think?
I bet you're Big Finn, right? Neither boy was visible. They were back in the shadows, like good smart gunmen. They've been around the block, seems like. Finn, you gotta show me the Braggs one by one. I got to see if they're alive and well. If you don't show them, then we figure you got no hostages and it's all over for you when we come in. That met with a mess of silence.
We ain't gonna show them to you. Keep you guessing.
How about you cutting them loose and sending them here to me? That way you'd get out of the house alive.
Sucker bait!
How about you sending me Queen Bragg and keeping women out of it? Just let her out the front door.
She's worse than he is. We ain't gonna spring her or him, Sheriff.
How come she's worse?
She's hell on earth, Sheriff.
Well, then cut her loose.
Who do you think I am, King Arthur?
Well, that stumped me. I'd never heard of that dude. Hey, kiddo, ask her what she's queen of. I always wanted to know. Her old man named her. His name was Admiral. That was his real name.
Cut the crap, Sheriff. You get us a horse and a buggy with a top on it, two saddled horses, and 10,000 clams. You got till sundown.
Where you going, boy?
San Francisco.
When you gonna get out there, boy?
We ain't saying.
What'll you do when you get there? For two boys about 11 or 12, they sure could snicker away. It sure was shaping into something strange. Two half-grown boys threatening a ranch family and wanting to clean out the till, and the pair of them ready to shoot. That's what troubled me. Boys that age could be good shots and know all about handling a weapon, but they didn't have an ounce of judgment. My ma always used to say, men ain't men until they're 30. That means I barely made the grade myself, and I was more than twice the age of those two brats threatening to bring tragedy down on a lot of good people. Big Finn, how are you gonna get out of there?
$10,000 in small bills, Sheriff, by sundown. Plus that buggy and fast saddle horses, and you get to be our insurance.
There isn't that much cash in the bank, boy.
That's the deal, Sheriff. Bring the dollars or Queen's gonna croak.
Show me she's alive, boy, and King, too. I was getting itchy, so I backed away slowly, and they let me. I had some calculating to do, and fast. About then, Rusty showed up.
Belle baked this apple pie. She says it's for King and Queen Bragg, and don't let those little skunks have it.
That was Belle for you. Full of kindness, but not a bit practical.
Bank says it can't be done. There's not that much cash in Wyoming, and it'd have to come up from Denver. And he'd want a transfer of deed from the Braggs. He can't just empty his bank without some collateral.
That ain't good news, Rusty. These hooligans may be boys, but they're grown up enough to kill and fixing to do it if they don't get what they want.
Would fake money do it?
They're smart boys, Rusty. It was a waiting game, and the brats controlled the clock. I grabbed that white flag and waved it and made sure it was being seen in the late afternoon light, and then headed for the house with the pie.
Stop there, Sheriff! You got money?
Nope. I got a real good apple pie sent by folks in town for the Braggs. You want to deliver it to them, Big Finn?
Nah, they can starve.
Hey, put it on the porch. I want it.
You can't have it. It was baked for the Braggs, not you.
Then I'll steal it. Put it on the porch or get shot.
And we need water. Bring us a bucket.
The pump was in the yard. Toss out a pail and I'll fill it. This was getting better and better, and I was getting closer and closer to that building. Pretty quick, a tin pail got pitched out the door and landed on the porch steps. So I eased forward, a little prickly because boys with guns get careless, but pretty soon I got the pail.
Where's that pie?
The door was open and he was back in the shadows somewhere.
That apple pie? Best pie I ever ate. It's for King and Queen Bragg, boy. You don't get one thin slice.
Where's the money?
We're getting things together, Mickey.
Get some water.
I took the pail, hung it over the pump spout, and began jacking the pump, and pretty soon water gushed out. I carried the bucket back to the porch, while a mess of stinking cowboys were watching from around the bunkhouse and sheds. I was wondering where they'd have me put the water.
Stop that, Sheriff. Set down the pail, drop your gun belt, and carry the water to the door. Set it in shadow inside the door, then back out. Then go get the pie and bring it.
I hefted the tin pail up the porch steps, across the porch, and into the doorway. The sun was blinding me, so I couldn't see in. But they were there, and they were armed. I backed off, started to pick up my gun belt, and a shot stopped me. I eased back to the sheds, got the fragrant apple pie from Rusty, and headed in again.
Leave the pie in the door, Sheriff.
Nah, I'm gonna deliver it to King and Queen. If they don't want it, I'll give it to you.
You crazy? Put that pie down!
You heard me, boy. Belle baked this for the Braggs, not for you. My eyes were getting used to the gloom. I could see them in there. Both had drawn revolvers, and the Braggs weren't around. Now you get Queen, and I'll give the pie to her. It's for her. Otherwise, I'll just take it back, and we'll slice it up at the bunkhouse. That was an odd thing. Those two, they didn't know what to do. If it was gold or greenbacks I was carrying, they'd kill for it. But they didn't know what to do with a nice, fresh, still warm apple pie. So I just stood there, thinking they'd make a move one way or another. I could maybe throw it at one and rush the other, but that was probably harebrained, so I just waited to see how it'd play out.
Get the old lady. When she gets it, we've got it.
Queen, she was hardly 30, but these were boys talking. Big Finn, he knew what the muzzle of a gun does to a man. He waved a .45 caliber muzzle at me and signaled me through the door.
Set it down on the floor, you big dope.
I set that pie down real gentle on the plank floor.
Hey, you big dope. Pick up that bucket of water and carry it to the kitchen.
Big Finn waved his revolver at me to make the point. So I eased slowly back to the front door, lifted the pail, lifted it by the bail with one hand and the bottom of the bucket with the other. But he didn't notice. Mickey, he shoved his revolver into his belt and grabbed the pie off the floor, which suited me fine. I headed for the kitchen at the back under Big Finn's gaze. But as I passed him, I twisted a little and tossed that water into his smirky face. The shot went wild, and I booted Big Finn in the gut. Caught Mickey in the middle with my fist. Caught the pie midair. That pie was for Queen, and she was gonna get it. I set it down as Big Finn was coming up for air and trying to aim. I wanged his hand, and the revolver went flying. I caught Mickey as he pulled his revolver out of his belt and knocked him halfway to China. Him as he sailed backwards, and he landed on Big Finn. That was when King Bragg landed on Mickey, and the party was over.
Got some pie for Queen. Well, she baked it special.
That's when Queen appeared in the stairwell.
Well, that's very kind of her, Cotton. Give her our regards. You want a piece?
In a little bit, Queen. We got us a couple of wiggling tadpoles here to get tied down.
King collected the revolvers, unloaded them, and set them on the kitchen counter. We heard shouting out there. They'd heard the shot Big Finn fired, but no one dared rush the big house. Not yet. Queen found a couple of lariats, and we hogtied them two little hooligans so tight they couldn't even stand up without help. I edged to the front door, wary of a wild shot. Come on in, boys, and have some apple pie. 10 guys were waving revolvers out there. They stared. Put away the guns, boys. I was still sticking to shadows. Those cowboys were a wild crowd, a little loose with the trigger finger. Rusty, you come on ahead.
You got a couple of Ukrainian beauties for me?
Nope, just a pair of dimwits. Sure enough, Rusty edged up the porch steps first, wary of a trap. But in one glance, he took in the brats tied tight, King who was guarding him, and Queen slicing apple pie into thin pieces since it would have to stretch to a dozen men. It was the pie that done it. We got to thank Belle for it. Big Finn, he was wrestling with the rope, flopping like a just-hooked bass. But Mickey, he just stared at us, his dream over, and maybe any hope of a good life, too, if he ever dreamed of one. You never know. Sometimes the worst fellow around wants nothing but a little cottage with rambling roses and a sweetheart and a job as a janitor somewhere. About then, all the Admiral Ranch hands rolled in, including Spittin' Sam and Big Nose George. It took them a single glance to see the two hooligans hogtied and Queen dishing out skinny slivers of apple pie. Best pie I ever ate.
You tell that Belle she's got to bake one for me.
What are we going to do with these little turds, Sam?
Use them for bait, George.
Like minnow bait?
Yeah, over at Lake Booger where the alligators live. We could troll these two with a hook in their mouths and wait for a bite.
What's the biggest gator you ever caught that way?
Well, that's the 10-footer we skinned out, Mr. Bragg.
And what were you trolling with?
A little pig with a hook in his snout. That gator, he swum up from under and down the pig in one gulp.
And the hook got set in his jaw and we reeled him in.
I'd rather hang.
I want to go to San Francisco.
That'll be up to Hanging Judge Earwig.
Hanging Judge?
He's even more famous than Hanging Judge Parker down in the Indian Territory. He packs him off to the gallows about as fast as the hangman can wind the new noose.
And we're gonna be taken to him.
That's what I'm planning on. You got any objections?
They can't hang boys. It ain't allowed.
Well, Judge Earwig prefers to hang girls, but he doesn't exempt boys.
He'd hang a billy goat if he caught the goat stealing.
He favors school marms. He's hanged more teachers than anyone I ever heard of.
He hanged a preacher a few times.
Well, they deserve it. We pretty near hanged one a few weeks ago, but he skedaddled just ahead of the noose.
The pair of hooligans, they looked a little pale around the gills. All right, Rusty, let's pack up this pair and lock them up. We'll fetch Hanging Judge Earwig, list a few dozen charges, and let them plead.
I didn't do nothing!
That's what I used to tell my ma when I got caught. We started for Doubtful along about sunset with the two hooligans on Admiral Ranch nags. A posse of cowboys led by Spittin' Sam came along to make sure that the sheriff, a man of dubious competence as far as they were concerned, delivered the goods to the county jail. I didn't mind. I always enjoy good company. Rusty, he'd been sort of sour ever since he lost his Ukrainian bride and her Siamese twin. Well, I'd be sour too, losing two brides for the price of one. So we headed along the lonesome road as twilight gained on us, but we didn't get far before the hooligans started bickering.
Told you not to go for that apple pie. Look what it got us.
Aw, shut up. It was your idea. You pushed me into it.
Would have worked if you knew what you were doing. I just got stuck with an idiot.
As if you knew what you were doing. You can't plan your way out of a flour sack.
I'll kill you as soon as we get out of this.
Go ahead and try.
You fellas sound real friendly. How long you known each other?
Met in the orphan wagon. Now look at us.
Yep, you're up to your buns in trouble, boy.
Ain't no jail holds me, Sheriff.
Shut your traps.
Let him talk, Rusty. It's all sort of a confession, I figure. These here poor little orphan boys got snookered by an apple pie. It's pretty entertaining. We made town about at full dark. Word had gotten ahead of us, and a lot of citizens were lining Wyoming Avenue to see the little criminals we were dragging in. I saw Belle standing there with Riley in tow and lifted my sweaty Stetson as we passed. Bertel, my part-time deputy, was waiting at the office.
Hanging Judge Earwig's in court and waiting for you.
You mean we don't have to lock up these suckers?
He's already got the lamps lit in his gavel in hand.
That gavel was a menace. He sits above the witness stand, and if he doesn't like the witness, he knocks him on the head with the gavel. It sure gets their attention. Guess we go to the courthouse for the trial. We're gonna need a few charges.
He'll supply them. He's real good with charges. And besides, we heard them confess as we rode into town.
That sounded about right. We were collecting a crowd, following along as we steered our tired nags to the courthouse. Critter, he laid his ears back and threatened to kill anyone who got within 6 feet. But the whole town knew about Critter. He'd injured half of them, so they got real respectful around my horse. We got to the courthouse. A light was burning upstairs in the courtroom. I nodded to Rusty. We both knew what was about to happen. Those two hooligans were going to dismount and run for it. Spit and Sam eyed me and nodded slightly. He knew. The rest of them cowboys knew. Sure enough, the hooligans dropped like rocks off their nags. I caught Big Finn by his shirt.
Let me go, you rat!
Spit and Sam clobbered Mickey. And everything went fine.
Just you wait, Sheriff. It ain't over. We're orphans.
He was expecting special treatment. Orphans being deprived and oppressed. But he wasn't familiar with Hanging Judge Earwig, who specialized in oppressing the helpless and hopeless. I always said Earwig was the secret of law and order in Pima County. The only people he didn't jail or hang were the rich and privileged, the ones he played cutthroat poker with on Wednesday nights. My ma, she always said Earwig was worth two or three sheriffs and a dozen deputies when it came to making the county peaceful and safe. The judge was waiting, and so were the privileged, who crammed the seats. He was in an affable mood, had his hair slicked back and his beard combed. He always was happiest when he could impose the maximum, and this time the sky was the limit. He watched the two hooligans enter, his bushy brows climbing up his forehead.
Court's open for business. Are these the little crooks?
These are the pair, Your Honor.
And what are the charges, Sheriff?
You name them, Your Honor.
What are your names?
Big Finn.
Mickey. Mickey who?
How the hell should I know?
Big Finn who?
Big Finn Earwig. You're my old man.
Never had I seen such delight crease the judge's formidable face.
So, I'm your old man, eh? Well, what did you do? Finn, you start.
We got some revolvers, raided the house, stuffed them two owners in the water closet, and told Spittin' Sam to bring 10 grand and a getaway rig.
Did you threaten the lives of the Braggs?
You bet your ass. Money by sundown or they were dead meat.
You, Mickey, you wave a gun around, did you?
Just a little.
Where are you gonna go, boy?
Back to Hoboken.
And what would you do there?
Work for someone.
You was gonna kill the Braggs boy?
Not me. Oh, I wouldn't hurt a fly. It was all a mistake. Big Finn, he scared me into it.
He's chicken.
How'd you spring the Braggs pickings?
With Bell's apple pie, Your Honor.
Well, that would do it, all right. Best apple pie this side of Salt Lake City. Do we have a confession here?
I didn't do nothing.
It's a double negative, boy. If you didn't do nothing, that means you did something, which is the same as a guilty plea. Good. That'll save us having to lasso a jury and go through all the rigmarole. Now, fatherless Mickey, how do you plead?
I got pushed into it.
Same as guilty. You just confessed. Doesn't matter whether you got pushed or walked into it, you did it. All right, that'll save us half an hour, and the county will get off cheap this time. I was hoping I wouldn't have to lock up these little farts and bring in the Braggs and swear a jury and summon Lawyer Stokes to bore us for an hour. Well, we've got it all locked up clear. Step forward for sentencing.
The boy stood frozen in place.
Of course, the trouble is, you're too young to hang. You gotta have some weight on the noose so the neck won't break. If you had another 30 pounds, your necks would snap just fine. But that would mean jailing you until you got big enough, and that would cost the county a heap of money, and cotton pickings would get bored with it all. No. There's gotta be a better way.
His brow furrowed until great ridges crossed his forehead. I rarely saw Hanging Judge Earwig at a loss for a sentence, but this time he was.
Huh. Too bad we're not on the coast. You two should be shanghaied, stuffed into a good clipper ship, and taken to sea. There's no way out. If you jump ship, you feed the sharks. But this isn't the coast, so I gotta come up with something that will work around here. Anybody got any suggestions?
Ship them out!
Mr. Turk, then these little farts will learn nothing.
Send them to college. What could be worse?
Yeah, not a bad idea, Reggie. Learn to be guillotined.
What's that word mean?
Oh, they stick your neck into a big meat cleaver, and after they cut it off, the executioner holds up your head so everyone can see your last blink. Well, you boys, what do you want for a sentence?
I want to be 100 miles from Big Finn.
That sucker cost me 10 grand. I don't want this fruitcake near me.
Yes, Bell's Pies can do that.
The judge seemed at a loss for a moment, but then he spotted One-Eyed Jack, the town blacksmith.
Ah, I think I have it. Hey, One-Eye, step forward, please.
Jack stepped forward. He stood 6 feet tall and about 3 feet wide, at least across the shoulders. He lost an eye in the Civil War and wore a black patch over it. His hair was graying now, and he viewed the world through one sulfurous, smoldering eye.
You good at leg irons, Jack?
Leg irons? I've made a few.
Can you make some no one can wiggle out of?
Well, you bet, Leonard.
I was reminded that Jack and Leonard Earwig played poker on Wednesdays.
You think you can hammer a little iron for these two?
I can. The secret's a long cylinder above the ankle. So tight they can't get the heel through.
Do you think you could make a chain they can't chisel through?
Well, now, that's a little harder, Leonard. But with a little daily checking, it'd hold.
Hanging Judge Earwig seemed to light up like a burning Christmas tree.
I got just the thing. It's worse than a hanging. It's worse than a beheading. You put a leg iron on their legs and connect these buzzards with a 3-foot chain. I'm sentencing them to be paired together with a leg iron for 1 year. If they kill each other, that's fine. If they learn to get along for the year, they'll be reformed. And meanwhile, the Braggs can put them back to work.
That was the most beautiful justice ever meted out by hanging Judge Earwig. People whistled and applauded. Get along or kill each other.
All right, One-Eye, you go fire up the forge. And when you've got these two in irons and chained up good, summon me for inspection and I'll release them to the Braggs. Let's have a party. The Braggs, they'll spring for a drink.
Next morning, Rusty was moping around my office like the whole world was against him. I knew the feeling. I didn't have my heart set on any Ukrainian mail-order bride who was a Siamese twin, but I'd eyed a few ladies in my day, like Pepper Baker, only to have her father rush her off to finishing school. That pretty near finished me. So Rusty was looking grim. He had a kid to raise and no woman. I deputized Riley and gave him a badge, and the kid strutted around my office with an empty scattergun. Might as well teach him about weapons at an early age. We had him swab out the 2 jail cells and told him he could be a jailer when he grew up, but he needed to know how to do it and we'd help him practice. Well, Puma County Supervisor Reggie Thimble blew his cork.
What do you think you're doing, Pickens? Making a little kid a deputy? Trying to screw the county, is that it? Trying to get us into big trouble? He's too young to be handling weapons. You pull him off the force right now or you're fired.
Reggie had been working for years to get me fired, but after I rescued the Braggs, he clammed up a little for a few days. But then he found a way to get around it. It wasn't my ability that nailed the little hooligans, it was Bell's apple pie, and Cotton Pickens had nothing to do with the rescue. The Braggs put the little criminals to work building fence. If they cooperated, they could dig the post holes, set the posts, and string wire. If they fought, then the fence wouldn't get built and the Braggs wouldn't pay them wages. I heard somewhere that fences make good neighbors, but maybe they make good fence builders, if the two didn't kill each other with spades or wire cutters. It was going to be a peaceful summer in Doubtful, until one June day, the Pike Brothers Carnival rolled into town, 20 enameled red and blue and gold wagons, with 17 sensational exhibits and 44 ways to improve the mind. There was a genuine live two-headed calf, and the blonde bombshells, and the petrified remains of Irish revolutionary Thomas Francis Meagher, who had turned into solid rock. The show ran 2 city blocks, the wagons drawn by slobbering oxen, and they paraded down Wyoming Avenue, stirring up some excitement, especially among the town drunks. I was all for it. Doubtful it was a nice town, but a little remote from the rest of the world. And now a genuine carnival show was setting up, and we'd have a fine few days. Probably a minor crime wave, but that came with the territory and I'd deal with it. Sure enough, they rolled in, dusky Cleopatra in pantaloons and a sort of vest and fez, and the 2 blonde bombshells side by side on a wagon, smiling at the gathering crowds. There was Little Egypt swaying languorously and rotating her hips. I figured the outfit would make a few dimes in Doubtful and pull out in a day or two. There weren't a lot of dimes around town, and maybe they'd be spent on flour and beans rather than two-headed calves or peep shows. Riding on a wagon with Pike Brothers Carnival lettered on the sides, the Major Domo wore a silvery coat with purple lapels.
Open at dusk! Sensational sights and uplifting exhibits! Educational exhibits free, rarities and oddities, 10 cents!
I wondered where they would set up camp, but shouldn't have. They needed a creek, and set up along Doubtful's little stream, which was fine except for the mosquitoes. I eyed the blonde bombshells, certain thoughts trailing through my mind, and decided to have a closer look at them. They sure were sitting tight together, and when they stood up, acknowledging the crowds, they rose and sat together. Could it be? Had they been kidnapped by this here outfit? I'd know soon enough, and maybe get them back to Rusty, assuming he'd want them and they'd want him. Carney ladies didn't enjoy the loftiest of reputations, and Rusty might have second thoughts. On the other hand, heartbroken Rusty Irons might just have his heart mended before this outfit blew out of town. I drifted along with the show and watched them settle on a spot and begin throwing up the tents. There was also stuff for sale and a beer garden, food, and candy. The stuff for sale, it was mostly gimcracks, like decks of cards with half-naked girls on it. I didn't know how a feller could concentrate on poker if he was looking at acres of bosom, but each to his own taste, I thought. There were games of chance, too. Hit the bottles with a ball and collect a prize of some sort, or a box of licorice. There was a game like horseshoes, in which you had to flip a ring over a spike, and if you tossed three rings just right, you got a teddy bear, or maybe a stuffed monkey. Well, those all cost extra, and didn't come on the dollar pass that got you into all the exhibits. Pretty quick, a rough customer and a bowler headed my way, and I knew I was about to meet the manager. He had a corrugated face that looked like it had been picked over by smallpox.
Sheriff, something wrong?
No. Pickens here. And you?
Heliotrope Pike. My show. We run a clean outfit.
You having a good season?
Nah. Country's gone to the dogs. Depression. I got performers quitting me because I can't pay them on schedule. These are tough times.
We've had a mess of shows through here this summer. Even an end-of-the-world outfit.
Well, that's what I should do. Scare the crap out of people and walk away with the loot. That's as good as it gets. Well, Sheriff, if there's anything you want, you holler. You get a free peek. Just flash your badge. Well, you'll like Cleo. She's got a lot of tit.
Sounds like a good evening. Say, tell me about the blonde bombshells.
Oh, them. Hot stuff. Pair of Russians, joined at the hip. They like to show it a little.
Where'd you get them?
Bought them? I don't know where.
Well, think about it. I'd like to know who sells Russian blondes.
Everything's for sale.
I'll be talking to you. The Midway rose with amazing speed. About dusk, the workers lit all the lamps, 100 or so, and the whole Midway got lit up and looked almost merry, and the Doubtful folks came boiling in. That's when I spotted Rusty.
Where are they?
We get to see them when the show opens. A few minutes.
About 6 people told me these are my women.
Well, these women have been sharing their charms for a while, Rusty. He glared at me, but I was glad he would be forewarned. About that time, the barkers got set up with their megaphones and began barking.
Step right up, folks. Show your pass or part with a dime and see the greatest sight ever to surprise mortal eyes. We got a sight in here never seen before in Wyoming. Come see Cleopatra and see the self-same curves that enticed the emperors and Caesars to a bedside. It's something never before seen, a tableau out of history. Women can see up to 5 cents, but all men must pay the full price. No discounts allowed. Step right up, folks.
Fellers were lining up to lay out a dime. Some had tokens, 10 for a dollar, that couldn't be redeemed anywhere else, but them cowboys sure wanted to see Cleopatra. And I was tempted myself. But Rusty, he just glared and went hunting for the tent that sheltered the blonde bombshells. That was down the Midway some, but we got her located. It was a big lofty tent and had 2 lamps at the door flap.
See a sight you've never seen, folks. See 2 beautiful ladies, their flesh connected at the hip. They'll show you how it is. Pull back the drapes and let you see this wonder, this freak of nature, this marvel, brought especially from Europe for the Pike Brothers Carnival. We should be charging 25 cents instead of one thin dime. Folks, it's worth 50 cents if it's worth a penny, and we're raising the price tomorrow. But tonight, our big opening in doubtful Colorado, Wyoming, it's one thin dime to see one of the wonders of the world.
Rusty, he balled his fist, but I put a hand on him to quiet him and got us in on our badges. The ladies were sitting on the stage in there, smiling at their audience. And Rusty couldn't stop staring. He looked so wound up, I thought he was a clock spring ready to break. The blonde beauties were sitting on a makeshift stage in that dark tent, not quite side by side, but facing each other a little. They were plain good looking, with ample curves beneath two gowns that somehow were slit at the side. Grecian gowns, you might say, diaphanous and womanly. One wore a nice seashell necklace. Both had rings on their fingers. I couldn't say what Rusty was thinking, but he didn't doubt these here were his Ukrainian mail-order brides, and now they were on display in a freak show, and it was shameful. When the tent was full up, maybe 30 people sitting on wooden benches, that huckster at the door came in and climbed onto the platform.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you will see one of the wonders of the world. Two beautiful women, joined from now to eternity at the hip, and fated to live their lives in sublime union. Look hard. They will show you this wonder for only a few moments. And then, tell your friends and neighbors to come here and see for themselves.
He eyed the silent crowd, gauging its interest.
Now, they don't speak a word of English. We don't know their names, so their friends here in the carnival call them Tiddlywinks. On the left there is Tiddly, and next to her is the beauteous Winx.
That's Natasha!
Now, folks, it is time to prove that this phenomenon is real. There is a bridge of flesh. Indeed, they share some organs, the doctors tell us. And I will ask them to stand and draw apart their robes just enough so you can have one discreet look at this oddity of nature.
He stepped aside and gestured. The twins stood, and each tugged the split gown away from her side, bearing the connection that began at the ribs and continued through the rest of the torso of each.
Step right up, folks, and have a closer look. You don't need to be glued to the seat. Come up and see for yourself, but don't touch. We're a respectable company, and this is an educational exhibit.
Several of the audience, all male, sprang up, studied the oddly shaped bond that connected the women as if it were gun cotton ready to ignite. Then they drifted back, satisfied that the joining was real and not some carny trick. The woman stared nonchalantly at the spectators, even as the citizens of Doubtful stared back, and then they rearranged their skirts. It wasn't indecent, but it violated them anyhow, and it made me boil up. Rusty, he corralled that huckster, who was standing blandly as the tent cleared.
Where'd you get them?
The huckster eyed him, and eyed me, and saw the badges.
We purchased them not long ago, and no, the act is not for sale. It's the top draw in our lineup. Man, it's the hit of the carny.
What do you mean you purchased them?
Oh, I'm sure Mr. Pike has the contract in his files.
These women are wanted by the law. They were stolen off a stagecoach.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that. I'll refer you to our manager, and he can answer your questions. The ladies certainly enjoy the attention. They earn a nice income for doing nothing at all but draw the draperies aside a bit. Man, that is a rare sight.
You're a pimp.
Oh, I'm worse than that. That's the least of my crimes.
These ladies were kidnapped, and we're holding them here.
Go talk to the manager. He's over in the Little Egypt tent. That's his sweetie.
Come on, Rusty. We'll talk to the women later. We got law business to do. We headed down the midway to the Little Egypt tent, where we spotted Heliotrope Pike selling tickets and chewing on a cigar. Pike, we want to talk to you right now. He started to protest, saw the look on my face, and nodded. Some lackey stepped in to sell tickets to the belly dancer show. You got a couple of captive women that got kidnapped off a stage to Doubtful, and we're keeping them here.
But you can't. That'd be entirely illegal, Sheriff. They're an act we purchased.
They got removed from a coach at gunpoint and banished until now. We're taking them in. The manager nodded, and we followed him to a sort of office wagon, and he led us in. He lit a lamp, opened a file drawer, and extracted a handwritten page. I couldn't make heads nor tails of it, and he sure wasn't using any letters I'd come across.
This is their contract. They were sent to us by a booking agent in the Ukraine. It details their salary, your term of service, and special quarters. We got them for 3 years at $10 a week plus feed. Oh, it's expensive feeding two women.
They were kidnapped off a wagon pack. They were to be mail-order brides.
That's an old racket. Get some love-struck groom to pay the passage. Then when you get here, ditch him.
Rusty sure was looking thunderous, but he kept his trap shut. Who talks Ukraine around here?
No one in the outfit.
We're gonna find a way to talk to them ladies. And I'm bringing over some witnesses that saw them get off the stagecoach. And if those ladies got kidnapped, they're staying here until we get it sorted out. That clear, Pike?
No, it's not. I paid good money for the act, and I'm keeping it.
I want that contract. You'll get it back, but I'm gonna get her translated.
It ain't yours, copper.
I have the feeling if I don't take it now, we'll never see it again, and it'll vanish from sight. Pike stared at me, stared at Rusty, who was looking like hell unloosed, and handed over the contract, if that was what it was. It was a sheet with a lot of foreign stuff on it.
Is there a translation? You got a contract in your file you can't read, and you say no one in this outfit can speak Ukrainian?
Show people, we got our own language. Look, gents, this is no big palooza. This is carny biz. These lovely gals, they're happy as corks and wine bottles. They can speak a little bit of English. Go on over and have a little talk with them. I got work to do, so if you'll excuse me.
Rusty, he didn't wait. He headed for the Ukrainian blondes, who were in their own special wagon awaiting the next show. Lots of people from Doubtful were wandering the midway now, trying games of chance and flocking to see Little Egypt. Some of the town ladies, they were a little put off, but curiosity got the best of them, and I watched them pay up and slide into the show tent to see the famous belly dancer and no doubt cluck their disapproval. This was the first carny show I'd been to, and I wanted to see the whole works. But Rusty, he stalked through the place like a torpedo and knocked on the door of those blondes, and pretty soon they opened. Together, of course. They had to do it all together. Rusty, he actually removed his sweat-stained hat and held it to his chest.
I'm looking for Anna and Natasha. I'm Rusty.
Rusty! Rusty!
They motioned us into a tiny dark bunk room.
This here's Sheriff Cotton Pickens.
Pleased to meet you. I was thinking I'd marry whichever one was left over.
Who's my bride?
Bride? What's that?
Who did I send for?
You don't send for one, you send for two. That was the trouble.
Who are you?
I'm Natasha. Too bad, Rusty. We were coming to marry you, but the bosses got to us first.
The bosses?
Rusty, Pike. He sends men to chase us when we were going to marry you.
He kidnapped you?
Oh no, Rusty. We tried to sneak away so we could marry you.
So his men made you get off the stagecoach?
Oh no, Rusty, we thought it was good. He sends a wagon to get us and we joined the carnival. We left all the way to the show.
Rusty, he didn't know what to make of it. Me? I thought maybe Pike's story was probably the right one. Rusty had gotten milked for a ship's passage.
Well, hey, you read this in English.
Rusty handed her the contract, written in some foreign language.
Oh, Rusty, this is a letter from our mother. She's saying that he should take good care of us and not send us back to Lvov, and pay us promptly and send her a tenth of it. She says we'll be in Cheyenne soon.
This is your mother's letter? Not a contract?
No, Rusty, you're such a simpleton.
Rusty was starting to deflate. I could see the hot air leaking out of him. I was about to tell him he should be content with Riley, but I kept my trap shut for a change. Rusty was hurting. Two blonde twins had taken him for a ride.
Hey, Rusty, we'll marry you, but you gotta join the show. We'll both marry you, and you join the carny, and we'll have a lot of good times. Right, Rusty?
Rusty just wheeled out of there into the night. I shrugged, nodded, and followed him out the door. Rusty, Mama always said sometimes opportunity's staring you in the face and you're not seeing it.
I'm tired of you and your ma.
While this outfit's here, you got a fine chance to woo the blonde twins. You got a real good chance to change their minds. You fetch Riley, and you go back to their wagon and tell them you want to be a family and live right here. Rusty sure was quiet. You're on your own. I'm looking into this outfit. Some of the things Heliotrope Pike said, they don't add up. Like buying the blonde bombshell act from a booking agent in the Ukraine and then showing us a letter from the gal's ma that was supposed to be a contract. Like taking them gals off the stage at gunpoint when they could have just as easy left the stagecoach at any stop and joined the show. There's something not fitting together here, and I'm gonna be finding out what it is. I'll do that tomorrow, and you go visit the ladies and get to know them.
Sure, Sheriff.
He never called me that before. I sure was wondering what was cooking in his noggin. There was a show in town, and a lot of folks in Doubtful who depended on me for their safety. Shows could make me itchy. This one did. So I started patrolling the business places, rattling doors, peering through windows, but it was real quiet. I thought of all them people, safe in their beds, pretty certain nothing real bad would visit them in the night. I was all there was that stood between them and trouble. That's what I was paid to do, and what I was sworn to do. Upholding the law was mostly keeping folks safe and keeping their property safe. It sure was quiet around town. I drifted over to Saloon Row, but most of the joints had folded up. They didn't like shows coming in. They wanted the cowboys and ranchers to unload their pay right there at their big bars. The ladies of the night felt the same way. Road shows were competition. Outfits with a little Egypt roll in their belly. Well, the cowboys could get all that locally and didn't have to shell out dimes to see it on a midway. But most of those places were sleeping too. One place, Denver Sally's, still had a red lantern bobbing on the breeze. That's how it was. Cowboys, they got tired and didn't get laid after midnight. The girls got tired too, all that hard work, and wanted their beauty sleep. I didn't see anyone busting windows or prying open doors, so I figured it was pretty peaceful over in the sporting precincts. But I still felt itchy, like something was bound to happen. My ma, she always said that the biggest things happened behind closed doors, and no one ever knew about it. Me? I didn't have enough of a life to put behind closed doors. The only time I ever closed a door entire was the outhouse, when I was doing my business and studying the Monkey Ward catalog before tearing off a page for use. That wasn't public. The rest of me, I didn't care one way or other. I thought to give one last look at the carny. The truth was, those folks were under my protection too. They might be strangers, maybe crooks themselves, but I was sworn to look after the safety and property of anyone in my county, and that included every person in the carnival and everything the carnival owned. The carny people were asleep. Most of their wagons had roll-up canvas sides, and some slept in those, some slept outside. It sure was quiet. I itched to go on in there, wake up Heliotrope Pike and get some answers about them Siamese twins from the Ukraine. His story didn't make sense. But tomorrow was another day. So I eased back from the camp, turned toward the creek, and wandered into their herd, which was artfully contained in a rope corral that employed wagons where there weren't trees to hold up the rope. Not that a rope would hold anything, but these oxen, mules, and horses weren't going anywhere. They eyed me, ears up, as I drifted in. It was quiet there, too. All I heard was the purl of Doubtful Creek. The animals stirred slightly and began a gentle rotation. They looked pretty thin. Pike used them hard, but at least they got vacations between each haul. Some were eyeing me, and some were staring down the creek some, and that always is a sign, so I watched, too. A quarter moon didn't shed much light, and the bottoms were blurred and bleak. But finally, I saw what them horses did. Something was moving along the creek. That's about all I could make out. Maybe it was a critter, like a catamount or a coyote, or maybe not so big. But I just stood in the quiet and studied on it, letting nature take its course. Whatever it was, it edged forward slowly, half afraid. I studied on it, not making sense of what I saw until it was closer. And then I realized it was a person, and he was carrying a bindle stick. And he was a bindle stiff. A tramp. A small tramp this time. Them hobos, they put all their possessions into a bandana, or sometimes a piece of canvas, and tied it up and hung it from a pole or stick, and carried the stick over their shoulder. This here puny hobo, he seemed a little itchy, sort of walking ahead some, quitting to look around, and then walking some more. He got to the rope corral, edging under the rope but kept to the creek bank, as if all them mules and broncs weren't there, and he simply headed up the creek. That's about when I got the oddest feeling. I knew that walk. That was a boy's walk, both cocky and scared at the same time. I'd seen that walk.
Nice night for a hike, Riley. Mind if I walk alone?
Leave me alone.
Heading out, are you?
I don't like it here.
I'll walk with you, boy. We'll go where you're going.
You let me?
Unless you want to go sit on that cottonwood log yonder.
The boy headed for the log and propped his bindle stick on.
You gonna take me back?
I don't know. You want to quit us?
Yeah. I don't have anyone.
You got some extra shoes?
Nope.
Summer's always fine, except when it rains. The trees are all leafed out. There's berries on the bushes, at least in July and August. Wild animals, too. It used to be buffalo through here, but they got shot away. Now it's mostly ranches, lots of steers, and a few horses.
It was better wild.
Some ways, yes. But it took a good shot to keep one's belly full.
No, it was nicer when there wasn't anyone. That's what I think.
A lot of people think that, too. I don't. I like a place where I'm safe and can earn a living.
You gonna let me go now?
How'd you get that name, Riley?
My pa. He's a sergeant.
But the name, where'd it come from?
At Fort Riley. But he quit my ma and I never seen him. Then she went east and couldn't take care of me. And I got put on the orphan train.
You named after a soldier post. I like that.
It's a bad name. No one else is named Riley.
Well, that's what's good about it. Gives you the edge in life.
Can I go now?
You unhappy with Rusty and Belle and me?
I don't belong to anyone.
Well, maybe you got it backwards, Riley. Do we belong to you?
Why should you belong to me?
You got to want us, Riley. All along, we've been hoping you'd adopt us. But you ain't done it yet, and we're pretty blue.
Adopt you?
Yeah. Belle, she's just hoping you'll adopt her. Rusty, he'd like nothing better than to be adopted. Me, I'll be an uncle if you'll adopt me.
He sat quietly on that log, and I let him. Me? I don't know nothing about boys, not having been one in years. But I figured if he sat there on the log long enough, he might adopt all three of us. And I wasn't far off the mark.
I'm tired, Cotton.
Then pick up that bindle and let's get you home. The next morning, I headed over to the Pike Brothers Carnival to see the boss. I was tired of pussyfooting around. And this time, Heliotrope Pike would give me some answers or face the music. My music. The Ukrainian twins were sitting in a specially made wide chair, sunning themselves. The show wouldn't get going until noon or so. Then people could buy a lunch, play the games of chance, see the hoochie-cooch girls, and disapprove of everything while shelling out their dimes. If nothing else, the show offered something new to people off the ranches of Pima County. Sure enough, Pike was breakfasting with his raven-haired sweetie, Little Egypt, when I got there. He had his own wagon with a roll-out canvas shade, which made an outdoor arbor. They were sipping some sort of black coffee made in a brass pot when I barged in. She was in a silky red kimono with nothing else, and he was in his underdrawers, and that was all.
Well, if it isn't the sheriff. Want some java?
No, but I want some answers, Mr. Pike.
At your service, Sheriff.
Little Egypt decided to vamoose and rose, revealing a lot of crepey flesh. She wasn't as young as she looked in the lantern light at night. I chose to remain standing.
We got a problem, and it's not solved, and it's gonna be. You got these Ukrainian twins in your show, the same as got taken off a stagecoach in my county at gunpoint, stuffed into a red and gold chariot, and hauled away. There were a few laws got broke, and we're gonna find out right now what happened and why.
What a bizarre story.
Yeah, well, there's a mess of witnesses, including passengers and the Jehu, and if we don't get some answers, this show's not going anywhere until we do.
You have no right to stop the show from going anywhere.
Just try me. We got abducted women in your outfit, and that's all I need.
Who says they were abducted?
The people that saw them removed at gunpoint and stuffed into the chariot.
Fantasy. People have vivid imaginations.
Yeah, and so do I. You go ahead and think about the 20 Kearney people stuck in Doubtful Wyoming because no one's talking about how those ladies got took off the stage and why and who done it.
You wouldn't hold innocent people, would you?
All you got to do is tell the story.
I haven't the faintest idea who abducted the women.
You bought the act, you say. You got the women. So talk. Where'd you get them?
On the road somewhere.
Well, who sold them to you?
Sold the act, sir. We're not talking about slavery.
Well, maybe I'm talking about slavery. Men with guns took them off the stage.
So Pike Brothers is to blame for this?
You got brothers?
No, I own the carnival alone. The name suggests a larger show. Pike Brothers sounds like a big outfit.
So someone in a circus chariot, seems like, made off with the Ukrainian women and tried to cover the tracks.
Look, Sheriff, that has nothing to do with us.
I'm thinking maybe you got wind of the Siamese twins and wanted them in your outfit and kidnapped them. Somehow or other, they went from the stagecoach into your outfit, and until we get some answers, you ain't going anywhere.
I'll check through my records and see if I can find the names of the people who offered me the act. You don't seem to grasp the business. Everything is a handshake deal.
You better come squeaky clean, or you'll be hanging around doubtful for a long time. Well, he didn't like that none. His next step would be to try to sneak out, no doubt at night, and hope I'd forget about going after them. But he would be a little surprised. I had a few plans of my own. And don't try sneaking out. Not by night, not by day. Not on Sunday, and not on your mother's birthday. Your outfit's no match for a posse of Puma County cowboys. I headed for the Ukrainian sisters, who were camped behind their show tent and in their chair enjoying the good Wyoming sunshine. And sure enough, Rusty had gotten smart and had settled in across from them, and had even taken his sweaty Stetson off and was rotating it in his hands while admiring his ladies. They were all sipping something that looked white.
Slivovitz.
What's that?
It's almost as good as marriage.
I smelled his glass, pretty near passed out. You're on duty.
Cotton, you're a peckerhead sometimes.
You could always quit and drink Slivovitz the rest of your life.
This here's Anna, and this here's Natasha.
It's real damn nice. Good piss water.
I told them I wanted to marry, and they laughed, and then said which. I said either way, I'd flip a coin. So we flipped a coin, heads Natasha, tails Anna. Natasha won, so I proposed. I said, Natasha, let's get married. And then Anna got mad. Anna said, that's not right. I've got to marry her or both. I said, I can't marry both. And they said, go to hell, skunkhead. And I said, maybe I'll marry both. And now, they're both mad at me.
I gotta talk to him. Help me. Natasha, you were coming here on a stagecoach, and some men stopped the coach and made you get out, right?
What a wedding invitation.
Then Anna piped up.
Every day, crossing the sea, people look at us. On the boat, on the railroad, people look at us. We're used to it. Some days, men give us cards. One man said he wanted to put us in a show. We'd be happy. But Natasha, she always said no. She's getting married. Me? No one asks.
So you got to Laramie and caught the Laramie and Overland coach here? Then what?
They are watching us. We get into the coach, and then we start to come here, yes? And then they stop the coach, out on the grasses, and make us get out. And there is this cart, stand-up room. And there's a driver, also masked, and we get carried away and go to some place I don't know, and we are told we are in a carnival. And that's better than one getting married and one not. We both get paid, yes?
Did the masked men who took you off the coach meet your boss here, Pike?
They gave us this wagon.
Didn't you protest, Natasha?
We got a house!
Did anyone call it an act? Were you an act? Did you sign a contract for an act? A show performance?
Rusty, what is contract?
They like it because they're taken care of. They can't care for themselves, so they like this carnival. They get fed.
This sure makes Pike look like the one who planned this little deal. Is there a two-wheel cart around?
You mean the golden red chariot?
I mean any cart. A coat of paint, that makes a difference. Witnesses, they see a red chariot. My ma, she always used to say a little war paint on a woman hides the real McCoy. So I want to see if this outfit's got a two-wheel cart and maybe any color.
You and your ma.
The women, they followed little of that. You got put here in the carnival? Did you say no to Pike?
I wanted to get married. This is my lover boy. Anna, she don't want that, so she's stuck. And I'm stuck. She won. She got us here. Me, I'd like to go to bed with Rusty.
Ooh-wee! Hot pajamas!
Anna, she don't care.
Make your deputy leave. He comes in here like he owns us.
Make him stay! He's my man!
He's not my man. Make him go away. We got a good wagon and a good act.
I stared at them two, stuck together for life, and felt real sad. When Rusty got loose, I planned to tell him to forget it. He was torturing them two ladies in ways we couldn't even imagine.
Rusty, you wanna marry me, like in the letters?
Maybe I could marry you both.
You get Natasha, not me. Go to hell.
You're robbing me, Anna. You're keeping bride from groom.
And someday I will kill you, Natasha.
Oh!
Reggie Thimble, the chairman, required my presence in the courthouse, so I grumbled my way over there knowing what was coming. Sure enough, he was laying for me. He sat behind a monster oak desk on an elevated platform, giving him an extra foot or so to look down at supplicants. He had a pouty little mouth, and now it was pursed with disapproval.
I've had a little visit from Heliotrope Pike, who is the chairman of the board and chief executive officer of the Pike Brothers Carnival. Is it true you are threatening to keep them in Doubtful until such a time as you choose to spring them?
No, they can leave whenever they fess up. Hand over the masked men who abducted the Ukrainian Siamese twins and whoever else perpetrated the crime.
I see. Do you suppose they are doing something entirely illicit, immoral, scandalous, and barbaric?
All of them, Reggie.
Mr. Thimble, if you please. Now then, do you have the slightest evidence, I mean actual, hard, court-worthy evidence, that any such crime was committed and by the people in the carnival?
Nope. I got witnesses who saw four masked men, three on horse and one in the chariot, order the blondes off the stagecoach, which they forcibly stopped at gunpoint. And I got a lot of hot air from Pike, who first said he bought the act, as he called it, in Laramie, but could supply no contract, and indeed has more or less admitted that there's been no vaudeville or carny act involving these ladies until he created one. Thimble wrapped his fingers on the beeswax desk, which he polished daily. When Pike turns him over, and himself, if he was the one giving the command, then I'll let the carny show loose, but not until then.
I don't suppose you'd imagine you have no right to do so.
It'll get the job done.
And what if these supposed abductors aren't associated with the Pike Brothers Carnival? What then, Mr. Sheriff?
Well, then I keep this outfit around here until they tell me who did the job. They got those twins somewhere, so they know who done it. Thimble stared his most withering stare, but I was used to it. Mostly when he stared like that, I noticed his right eye, which was slightly crossed.
You'll not impede the carnival when it chooses to go. That is an order, subject to termination of your job if you should disobey.
I ain't budging. The law got broke, I got the perpetrators right here, and as soon as I can get them tried and sentenced, the show's free to go to Los Angeles or any other hell.
Has it occurred to you that the merchants of Doubtful are suffering? Already this summer they've had to weather a medicine show, a doomsday preacher, and now a carnival. Doubtful survives on the trade of the 500 cowboys and ranchers surrounding us. But this year, the cowboys have invested in quack medicine, donated their last cent to the doomsday crook, and have opened their purses and pitched out dimes and dollars to play games of chance on the midway. Little Egypt's belly roll. And our shops suffer.
Sorry, but I got laws to uphold, and this show doesn't leave here until it coughs up the bandits.
Come now, bandits. They didn't steal a nickel.
They stole two lives, Reggie.
Mr. Thimble, please. The ladies seem quite content. You seem to be inventing a crime and a tragedy out of whole cloth.
I got laws to enforce, and if you fire me, the law of Wyoming and this county won't get enforced.
That's the idea, Sheriff. Exactly the idea. You will not impede the carny. We want them out as fast as they can harness up and go. I wish they had left yesterday, but no such luck. You've been warned. This is the second offense on your ticket this week. The first being appointing a little boy a deputy, putting the whole county at risk. Have you taken the badge back?
Nope, he's pleased as punch. There ain't another kid in the county gets to be a deputy sheriff. My ma always said I was stubborn, and I'd get myself in trouble because of it. And now I was being stubborn all over again, and pretty soon I'd be looking for another job. He had a way of sighing that was plumb theatrical. He used it at every board meeting and every political rally. There wasn't nobody in Wyoming with a sigh like Reggie Thimble's. That was a good one.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.